This is the Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, Andrew Gaff stunned the footy world with his hit on Andrew Brayshaw. We'll take a look at the incident and the fallout from it as the Eagle gets set for a stint on the sidelines. We'll also find out whether rumours of football's demise have been greatly exaggerated, talk score reviews, big winners, bad losers, and which teams are going to make the top four and the top eight. All that and much more right after this.
Here comes Buddy, wheeling onto the left. He is putting on a clinic.
Got to Taylor Adams. Can Cox get his body in the way? Farco, time, space, and goal! Picked up by Kennedy. Couldn't get boots of ball. It's a live footy. McCartan, he managed to get boots of ball. Is it a goal? They think it is. It is a goal.
Hello and welcome to the Age Real Footy Podcast. My name is Michael Gleeson, and joining us this week is Brownlow medalist, premiership star, Jimmy Bartel. Welcome, Jimmy.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to this.
And Toe Turf, Jake Nile. Welcome, Jake. You're limping along, but
I'm okay. And you missed with Jimmy, Norm Smith medalist.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, before we get into all of that, let's just hear the audio of what happened in the big incident at the weekend.
I think it's Gaff boys on the far side of the ground. So they came together.
So we mentioned the first one.
This is no good. This is broken jaw territory.
Andrew Brayshaw was king here, 100 metres off the ball. He's got a fractured jaw and four displaced teeth that are caved in, and he'll be undergoing surgery tonight.
So, your thoughts on the incident itself?
I think it's self-evident. I got an 18-year-old kid that I saw in a real mess.
Yeah, I just want to apologise to Andy, and I feel sick. I feel sick about it and did the wrong thing, and a lot of things. It doesn't indicate my character and all that, but my main thought is how he is, and very remorseful and feel sick about it.
Well, cutting straight to the chase and declaration from the outset, we're recording this before we know what the charge will be. We know that Andrew Gaff's going to be charged. We know that you would expect it to be high contact, severe impact, intentional, and it'll be a direct referral to the tribunal. Jimmy, what did you make of it?
Oh, like everyone else, I was leaving the Melbourne Gold Coast game and flicked the radio.
That would have been a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. First thing I heard on the radio was, Gaff's been involved in the big incident at King Hit. I'm thinking, geez, who's clubbed?
Yeah.
Who's clubbed Gaff?
Yeah.
Because
Why would you?
175 games. I don't even think he has a fine to his name, let alone a suspension. It was completely confusing and baffling.
In fact, he's almost the last player in the whole competition. That might be an exaggeration, but
he's on the podium.
He'd be on the He'd be one of the last players you would expect to do that thing. And I wonder what effect his clean skin record and reputation will have on the penalty.
See, I think it will, because when it gets flicked to the tribunal and they go through it and they hand down their penalty, you actually have the opportunity to have those character references. So, remember Bashahuli? He had everybody from the Pope, Queen, everyone. Oh, the first time it did work.
He got two weeks
and then we had to do it all over again. So I feel whatever he gets given, they'll make a strong point of what they give him, and then they'll deduct one because of his clean skin. So in my thinking, it'll be 7 weeks, but due to the fact that it's Gaff and his career and his personality, it'll come down to 6.
Well, I think there's a reasonable argument that he would have, and I would imagine that he will take, is that he intended to strike, but not to strike to the head. And I think that he went to punch him into the chest. Brayshaw dipped a little bit, maybe expecting a bump, and he struck him in the face. Now, that all falls on him. That doesn't change the fact that you deserve to be suspended. But what it does do, Jake, is when you look at his record and the fact that he's never been done for anything, that can influence your thinking of what would his intent be. Hmm. Would he intend to hit someone, this person that's never hit anyone before? No. So I think it'll be a 5 to 6 week.
I'm guessing it'll be 6.
Yeah.
It was almost my instinct immediately. And if it was someone who was not as good, it would be 7 or 8.
Yeah,
but I think it'll be 6. But you know, we'll reiterate to the listeners, we are doing this. You may well be listening to this after we look like fools.
We're all getting the same play saying 6 weeks. It's just how that all sort of comes out. But I think him trying to explain himself, I know he might be going, oh, I'd like to explain myself, but I think it'll just be, I've made a massive error here. Because when I looked at it again, and I'm with you guys, it was a swinging action.
Yeah.
And again, don't condone any of it. He'll get his right whack. But it was the inside of the hand. It was almost like he's clubbed him. Like, you know, we've seen how many times in the game players swinging arms around the chest and things like that.
A bit like Basher Hooley.
No, oh, that was going back.
That was going back.
That was going back. But we see it stoppages, you know, players trying to physically exert themselves, especially in the game.
Exactly.
Swinging, like, it's still a fist, it's still a punch, it's still a strike. But it's like he's clubbed him with the inside of your hand when you go back and watch it again.
You've made this point before, and I think it's a point well made about the football and non-football act. Yep. And this was a non-football act, but it's also one that is in lesser degrees tolerated on the field by those incidents around the ball. The bloke that comes up and he throws his elbow into your kidneys at the back, and it's just, he's just trying to rough him up. Well, no, it's a hit.
Yeah, exactly right.
I think there's two big issues that come out of this. I mean, what happens, happens, right? One is whether the West Coast Eagles can win the premiership without him. That's a very important question.
And Nick Nat.
And Nick Natanui. Now, it'd be extremely difficult, I would have thought. And curiously, let's say he's got, let's assume on the, let's act on the assumption he's got 6 weeks. West Coast have an incentive to lose the first week. No. Strange as it may seem. They to get to the grand final, they would have to play an extra final. So that's just a curious
thing. And it's an extra final away from Perth.
Away from Perth. The other one is that the send-off rule. There will be, and I've just written something, again, I wrote this after the Jeremy Cameron, Harris Andrews incident. I think it's something that if we really only need to look at it for a couple of incidents a year. So it would be basically Cameron and this one, and that is it. That's my view. Other codes have it. I would bring it in. One thing it would have done, Jimmy, is that the retaliations against Gaff, which this threatened to spiral completely out of control, if he's removed from the field, we do not have that issue.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it's more than anything. It's just, well, we've lost a player. Why do you get to keep a player out there?
That's true.
Yeah, what do you think about send-off, Jimmy?
It's who adjudicates it? So is it
a match
official.
An equivalent to Michael Christian, basically, in the control booth.
And is there a hurdle that the action has to get to be in the carding? So look, I'm open to the idea. I just want to hear the workings of it first. And not just let's have red card, yellow card, this sort of stuff, because that's when you'll have people going, well, he got a red card 2 weeks ago and he got a red card. Why isn't that there? As long as we're clear.
My view, as I've written, my view is the other player has to be off the field. So that's one of the first preconditions for the rest of the game. So the other player has to be off the field. It has to be either intentional or so close to intentional, like running a red light. And it also has to, they're the main
things. Well, the danger, Jack, is that you have it referred by video to someone watching, and then you still come up with what happened on Saturday night where there's uncertainty over a ball that hit the post or not hit the post.
Exactly. And a counter argument, a lot of people say, well, we've had two incidents in how many games of football?
Yeah.
Well, there's the grand final argument.
They always
bring up the grand final, but or a prelim final, but there was a goal kicked by Tom Hawkins in a game you played in. And we got the score review system pretty much after that, as a result of that. And even though mistakes get made, it still doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
Oh, we would have only won by 11 points. Oh, no, 7, sorry.
Was it an error on Saturday night?
I don't know. I'm not convinced as others. No. I know a lot of people are, and I think it's always one of those things, if you go looking for something, you can find it. But what I took out of the weekend, there's been a clear change from the big chiefs at AFL House. Let's speed up this process. Because you notice how quick it was done?
Yeah.
Also, there was one in the Hawthorn, or two in the Hawthorn Essendon game, both involving Henderson. 15 seconds, back down to the ground. Back the umpire in, and I think that's been a clear directive. Back the on-field umpire. If you can't get it in two or three angles, let's get the game going.
I actually thought that was, for what they had available, I thought they made the right decision. They said, well, look, unless there was video that we didn't see, there's no way you could overturn what the umpire's gut feeling was based on that video.
I think it was also very coloured by Josh Jenkins.
Yes.
Superb.
Well, we'll listen to him now.
My grandma raised me not to tell fibs. I might be in the post, but I'm pretty happy that he didn't think so.
As you were saying, Jake, he is one of the better media performers.
He's a fantastic media performer. His writing as well as his commentary, and having spoken to him, yeah, he just speaks very, very honestly about nearly everything. And, you know, I thought that was refreshing.
Well, he probably, yeah, he would have looked dishonest if he afterwards said, "Oh, no, I always thought it was a goal," given that the Wayne video Harms at the time showed him saying to his teammate, "Hit the post," and he's calling his teammates in to...
Didn't Wayne Harms say he thought it was out?
Yeah, well...
Don't bring up those poor memories for Collingwood supporters.
Were you a Collingwood supporter, Jimmy?
No, not at all, but you just hear him, it still haunts them.
The 5-1 goal results change anyone's thinking on the idea of rule changes?
Not for me, because I...
You don't want rule changes anyway?
Yeah, well, my thoughts on this has been, let's exhaust the rules that we currently have at the moment, and we still have so much confusion around so many of the rules, you know, like protected zone and, you know, infringements in marking contests, incorrect disposal, all sorts of things, that let's just get those right and let's just do some things within the game. So let's work on throwing the ball in a lot quicker. Let's get it up, balled up really quick. We can do away with the ruckman sticking their hand up. Look, just little things. Let's do that. And I don't understand the rush to bring in these rule changes so quickly. Well, why do they have to be in suddenly next year? Why can't
we? You're in the Clarko bracket of police the rules that we have. And speed the game up. Open it. If you want to open it up and speed it up, do it with what's already at your disposal.
Yeah. And once we've exhausted all those options, yeah, sure, let's explore some other things.
I'm a little bit different. I'd say...
Oh, we know that, but what about...
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Understatement of the podcast.
I think that we can't base everything on the most recent games. We've got to look at the whole season in its totality. And really, these decisions, what it underscores to me is they have to be made over a whole season. Let's wait until the finals are done. And unfortunately, I think there was a bit of a rush from Steve Hocking and his group to get some of these things changed. But I think 666 will actually enhance the sort of things that we're seeing now. And to look at some of these close finishes, let's just imagine with the 666 rule, you won't be sending players behind the ball to the same extent, and you'll have a chance to come back and win these games.
You will. They'll just get there. They'll force it.
Well, they might, but the idea is that...
Center clearance.
When there's 20 seconds left on the clock and you're a goal behind, the other team can't have 10 defenders.
No, you can have 8. You push your wings back. But my thing is, this whole reference back to the glory years of football. You can drag around from 1988. I looked at this and there was round 12, 1988. You had 30 played 50. You had 60 played 70. Now, my point being is there's always been good games of football and always been bad games of football. And when good sides play really bad sides like we saw yesterday, there's going to be blowouts. And when the good teams play each other, we're going to have good games. So this whole...
Collingwood-Sydney was not a good game of footy. It was an ugly,
you sure?
tight game. Yeah,
so,
I reckon
so
it
I reckon you're arguing the other point, which people have lumped together two different arguments, is scoring versus congestion.
No, it wasn't whether it was high scoring or not. I just thought it was... On that small ground, it was congestion, and it was saved by the fact Buddy was Buddy.
Yeah.
And so he looked fantastic. I
found that fantastic. Buddy was unbelievable. But I reckon the extended goal square increases scoring. People are talking about zones increases scoring. So that's a different argument.
I'm not as worried about scoring as I am about just – it felt like at no point could anyone get clear. It was just
– Yeah, but that's the beauty of that game.
Yeah.
So each game had its different look to it.
I've got to say though, I think we don't want big changes. I think the changes that they make, and this is the way it's going. If there's going to be changes, Jimmy, they're not going to be the radical changes. They're looking at incremental changes, and that is clear from everything that Hocking said.
Just one last one. So Melbourne plays Gold Coast yesterday. They win by 96. If you stick zones in a bigger goal square and even potential 3x3, how much does Melbourne win by?
Well, I'm not sure that it would be that much greater because when you say zones... When you say zones, 666 is not zones.
Well, call it whatever you
want. It's only for centre bounces.
Yeah, well, call it whatever you want.
But we're not going to zones for all stoppages.
No, you're looping... You're not answering my point here because if it's 6v6 and you just said centre clearance is a premium, you got the best ruckman in the game, Max Gawn. They win by 96 points. They're going to win by 160 points. Is that good look for the game?
I don't think that's the case. I don't think they'd win by 160.
I don't think it changes that significantly. In that sense,
Gold Coast may come up with a mechanism.
How?
to well Coaches do. They come up with something.
See, that's where I differ. And it just, let's just exhaust the ones we have at the moment and stop thinking. People got to get this thought out of their head that the football was had a perfect year or perfect.
Yeah, but they also have to get the idea out of their head that football never changed. Football and rules never changed.
Football rules have changed. We've made that
exactly.
many changes.
So when you're saying leave it alone, leave the game alone.
No, I'm saying
the game's never been left alone.
No, I agree. But the rule changes that are being floated are pretty significant rule changes.
No, they're not
to you because you're in, you know, camp. Let's change everything.
No, I'm not.
No, I'm not.
Hang on. I'll just be very clear. I'm opposed to starting positions.
Yes.
At all stoppages. Yep. I'm in favour of 666.
Yeah. That right. Okay.
That's where I sit.
Yeah. You know, I'm happy to disagree with you on that one, but I think we still have to work on the ones that we've got first because we've got fans throwing their arms and going, "Oh, what's going on here?" We had halfway through the year that was still confusion around free kicks being in marking contests with players working under the ball.
Mm. What I think the AFL has partly undermined themselves with the rule changes is that do we trial it, do we not trial it? They've been seen to be panicked, and we discussed this a bit last week. I don't think they were even helped by the idea of how they tinkered with the women's fixture last week, bringing that up, that we're going to have more teams and fewer games, and it seemed to be
there was a hell of a backlash.
Something floated without it being finalised, and I think that's been part of the AFL's poor messaging is that they're floating things before they've got a firm position on something.
Well, maybe that was I don't know
unless
if that,
was their firm position.
Maybe that was deliberate because now they've got an outcry. It'll be very difficult for them to, with Daisy Pearce leading the charge, it'll be very difficult for the AFL to go.
Nicole Livingston as well. Nicole Livingston really went after
them. Yeah, I don't think, I think they won't go with the six-game, two-final system. I don't think that'll happen.
They are very good at testing the temperature by throwing out the worst possible scenario and walking it back, to use the term.
Like,
you're even going back to this rule change stuff. At the start of the year, by thinking, throwing it out there, it changed everyone's thinking from should there be rule changes to what rule changes will be coming in.
That's right.
Well, coming up, there were other games played at the weekend. We'll move on to those.
You're listening to the Age Real Footy podcast. Keep up to date with our footy coverage all week at realfooty.com.au.
Seconds start ticking. I need the clearance, the Bombers. Rough head off the back of the square. Seconds keep rolling. Ball knocked out towards Heppel. Couldn't trap it. Segler bangs it forward, and that'll do it. Siren sounds. What a classic.
Welcome back, Jimmy. How much did that one goal shape the finals fortunes for Hawthorn and Essendon? Did it kill Essendon, and did it deliver top four for Hawthorn?
I think it gives Hawthorn a great chance to finish in the top four, but it certainly did kill off Essendon's chances. Now, the whole mathematically possible sort of stuff happening for Essendon, but they've still got to play the Tigers at the MCG and Port Adelaide at the Adelaide Oval. That's a pretty tough run, so they need a lot to go their way. For Hawthorn, that was a pretty gritty win because Essendon did throw a lot at them. They jumped them every quarter. They managed to hang pretty tough, Jake.
Yeah, look, the Hawks are just, you know, people, no one would have seen them in the top four bar probably themselves pre-season, but it's now a realistic possibility. I think that there are two things about Hawthorn as a football club, because we're now going to start looking not only at what a team does, but what a club does. Their ability to get their best players on the park, despite having a lot of veteran players who played in a lot of finals campaigns, just outstanding. Andrew Russell, an unsung hero of the competition in terms of what he's done for his club. And another player that I want to bring up, Ben Stratton, just an outstanding player who I think has not gotten the recognition that he warrants. I think outside of Alex Rance, would there be a better defender in the game?
I think his game's evolved, and you hear Hawthorn players speak about it, you know, after the weekend where he had seven intercept marks. Now, he went from shutdown defender to the jack-of-all-trades defender. He'd play on a tall or small. Now he's adding that intercept mark and he's actually providing the rebound. So I think he's just, as he's maturing, he's becoming the senior head back there.
And they've got, Jimmy, they've got a few players that are in that camp. Luke Bruce is now being recognised for, you know, a genuine star, not a good player.
Overshadowed by
a little guy called Cyril.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've got...
But he's almost in leading, he's in the top bracket for the Coleman.
As a small forward. So
look, he was taking mark, like he's strong, actually strong overhead. He took a couple of good grabs.
He's made mention that, he, you know, all players want to keep improving their game, and he wanted to improve his overhead marking. But further than that, he's 2 goals a game.
Yeah.
Now, if you, you know, the old magnet, you know, take the name out of it, and you said, all right, your forward pocket is going to kick you 40 goals a year. Well, two a game. You go, oh, geez, how much do we fork out for that? You just cement it to the whiteboard, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, you'd give that every time. And
interesting too, a couple of years ago, there was a chance of him being traded. The Giants made a big play for him.
Yeah.
They offered, I think, 2 picks in the top seven,
wow,
I believe, for Luke Bruce. It was just at last minute. It'd be, because he's actually from New South Wales. So there was a big play. I think that's going back to the year before Stevie Johnson went.
Yeah, I think he also, I mean, he's on decent money. I think they might have, I don't know how seriously they entertained it, but I think they sort of wondered, well, is this the player that we should trade to regenerate? And they quickly said, no, it isn't, for exactly that reason. We've got 2 goals a game sitting there. And Gunston as well, I think, was the player that every time you see him, you think, he's as good below his knees and nimble below his knees as he is in the air. And he's beautiful. He's good on the lead, but he's very sharp. I don't know if anyone can gather the ball and snap as quickly as him at his height.
Oh, he's an incredibly difficult matchup. And those two in combination, they work so well together. But do you stick at all on Gunston? Because as you said, he's good on the lead and he can mark overhead. But then he's so nimble at ground level. So do we chuck a small on him? He's
too big. You put Stratton on him.
Yeah, Ben Stratton, his own teammate, is probably the best matchup in the comp.
Well, I reckon Grimes is a good matchup for him.
Or like a Camden McIntosh from the Tigers. Yeah, just be bigger, a bit quicker, pretty agile.
Yep. Yeah, and the Bombers were, you know, they played well.
They
played well, and I think Hawthorn just elevated their game just a little bit. The scoring in that game, Jimmy, was very free.
Yeah. The Bombers, where they are on the ladder, is how they played on the weekend. So they're a side making that transition from just being an average side up to a good side. So they can play their fast bounce footy off halfback. You know, you think of Saad and McKenna and these sort of blokes. To get themselves to elevate to where the likes of Hawthorn are on the ladder, they've just got to add different layers to their game. And they're still missing, even though they've improved, the inside mid, because they've certainly got speed everywhere. They are the quickest side in the comp when they're absolutely flying. But they just need someone there to take a bit of pressure off Merritt and Heppel in the middle.
Have you got someone in mind?
Jack Nile, I think, once he recovers from the turf toe.
No, I'm serious. Is there a player that they could...
Oh, look, they'd have to fork out pretty big because in a trade, because I don't think... Well, there's none left now in free agency, as we've discovered.
What did you think of the way Geelong took to Richmond, and what did you think of the coach's comments afterwards about the Tigers?
Well, firstly, on the way they took to Richmond, I wasn't sure whether it was a conditions thing or it was actually part of the planning all week. So first sort of attacking play, Joel Selwood gets in the middle of the ground at centre-half-back. Normally at the MCG, you see sides, they'll sort of work their way out of half-back, you know, up towards the logos. He thumped it straight down the middle. Now, knowing my days at Geelong, whenever it rained, the coach encouraged you, just kick it down the middle, because it's very hard to mark the footy as a defender, and it's easy to bring your defence in behind it. And so you play that route A football, you know, the soccer term, box-to-box sort of thing. So I wasn't sure whether it was a conditions thing or a direct plan to play against the Tigers. They certainly tried to run it out a lot more by a handball, and they fluffed a few, but Richmond had the highest pressure game recorded this year. So they certainly brought the pressure. And
that's partly the conditions, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Ball games have high contested ball.
But still, you still have to bring that energy around the contest as well. So, yeah, I agree with you, the conditions.
I was at the ground. It didn't feel like that. It's funny. It didn't feel like a high intensity game, probably because a little bit of the speed is off it from the wet ball.
But I reckon at Geelong for about 20 minutes had the game. I don't think, as people are reporting, they were in it for a lot of the game. It felt like 10 minutes after halftime.
They were at arm's reach for most.
Yeah, and then that final 10 minutes where they had the chance to win it.
So what about Chris Scott's comments? Were those comments A, justified, and B, were they tactical?
They were certainly tactical, and I hear a lot of people saying Chris Scott is pretty salty about it, and you know, he didn't credit Richmond. Now it goes to the next question, and you guys have been in these thousands of times. Who is the coach talking to in the press conference?
Yeah.
And he might have been speaking directly to his players and his own fan base. So I know Richmond supporters going, well, where's our credit and all that? Everyone knows Richmond's a fantastic side, and they're 9 unbeatable at the MCG. We know that. But is Chris Scott speaking to the Richmond supporters?
No. No. And
was what he said accurate? I think what he said was accurate.
Well, it is. And I think people have taken it the wrong way. They're saying they need a lot of luck. Every premiership side needs a lot of luck.
That's right.
Yeah, we just saw the Giants. They just lost 4 guys and played with, you know,
they finished the game
with 16. You need a ton of luck to win premierships, and nothing is guaranteed. You go through it. We were supposed to win 2008. We didn't. Saints were supposed to win 2009. They didn't. Collingwood were supposed to win 2011. They didn't. So he's just bringing
Hawthorn 2012.
Yeah. So there's still plenty to go in this season.
Did that weekend shape the ability of Collingwood and GWS to be able to? You talk about the luck. I can't see Collingwood getting near a flag with their injury list now. GWS is a big question mark with some of their outs.
Yeah, but how bad are these? How many of them are going to be done?
Well, they haven't got a key defender.
Right.
Collingwood, you're talking.
Geelong. Sorry, GWS, I meant.
GWS, yeah. Well,
Green's Simpson, okay. Green's not going to be out.
That was a cautious approach.
That's a cautious approach. So forget Green. He's okay.
Simpson's the important one, that comes
Simpson
up.
Is important, yep.
Yeah, because of that combination. They've discovered Lobb's not a ruckman, say. He's a forward who can come, do some relief ruck work. And the advantage that they were getting from him, he was having about 17 hit-outs to advantage. Now, you give that Giants midfield a head start, look out.
Are they the biggest danger to Richmond? Well, they get most of their players out there?
Oh, yeah, because we've still got Taranto who didn't play.
Yeah.
Dylan Shield didn't play. I know I'm missing a couple others who can run like the wind.
Deledio's out, but I don't see that he's...
But they could bring back
I don't think it's out of the question that the Giants could finish second.
No, and I think that... Well, look at their run home is Adelaide in Canberra, Sydney at... What's that? Spotless.
Yep.
And Melbourne at the G.
Melbourne at the G would be very tough.
Yeah.
They'll beat Sydney.
That gives them two. And look...
They'll beat Adelaide at Canberra. They are very hard to beat at Canberra.
They are almost unbeatable at Canberra because it's such a big ground.
Yeah, it's enormous.
And their outside running ability is
well, West Coast's run home is Port Adelaide in Adelaide, Melbourne at home, and Brisbane at the Gabba.
No gimmies there.
No, not gimmies, but they should be winning them. Melbourne at home, you know, the home ground. But now they're without. They will be without Gaff, and clearly Nat Nui's out long term. So it's that is still open. The other team, though, I mean, we were talking, you know, Collingwood had been in the eight. They had been in the four. And, Jake, their injuries are significant.
Horrendous. And the thing about it is, I don't know what the statistic is. The number of times that Collingwood have lost players during games. Now, against Richmond, they lost 2, and they had Majacek had to basically stay on the ground. And in this game, Darcy Moore from early. And I don't think, I mean, you know, I think Nathan Buckley was trying to, I mean, he couldn't really gild the lily here. Because you like to not use injuries as an excuse. But if Darcy Moore stays on the ground, they win that game.
Yeah, it was a one-kick game.
Franklin was... There's a difference between Franklin being on song and being difficult and being unbeatable.
Well, he's
completely unbeatable in a contest.
He's playing on a debutante basketballer.
That's right.
And without Jeremy Howe in there as well. Right.
Now, you made the point before, Gleese, about the talent dilution.
Yes.
That's where you end up. You end up with a basketballer on the best forward in the game's history, recent history. Just staggering. But what a player. For him to do what he does at 31.
It is. But equally, the question then comes back. The longer term question is just, what is going on at Collingwood to have this run of injuries? You know, Darcy Moore, another hamstring. Jamie Elliott last week, another hamstring. They might need another review, Jake.
Well, I don't know what they... I mean, I'm sure that they'll be looking at it.
Okay. Take a break just between us.
Just between us. Welcome to another episode of Just Between Us. Daniel Zebra Cherney has joined us. Daniel, it's one of the worst jumpers I've ever seen. We like open and honest feedback on this program.
360 degrees, letting teams
just between us, I'd put that straight in the furnace.
That is very funny. Sam, just between us, good to have you with us wearing double denim today. Very
sure it is. It is, yeah, two-tone though. So
Justin Timberlake-esque.
Okay.
Sam, just between us, there's a big meeting of AFL player agents this week.
Oh boy.
It's their annual agents conference.
I wonder what they talk about. My player is better than yours.
I'm pretty sure most of the time the content is very boring, having spoken to a few agents about the conference generally. That's no offence to the AFLPA. I think it's just dry subject matter which they need to get through.
Do you think they all look around at each other and think, I'm better than him, or she's better than that person?
I think many of them think the others aren't very good people. But anyway, by the by.
Just between us.
Sam, just between us, for many years it's been an issue in player agent ranks, the way players are approached by managers when they're 16, 17. There's a rule that they're not allowed to be approached until they're 16, and in the under 16 year, after the under 16 national carnival.
And with the approval of a parent, I think that's one of the
rules. But it's been so tricky trying to enforce those rules.
Yep.
The AFLPA have brought in a website for players that players need to go onto to register before they speak to player agents. It's approachingplayers.com.au. And this is going to be outlined to the agents this week.
Right.
And it's trying to streamline the process and make it a bit more organised and stop some rogue operators, of which there is talk that there are still some. We saw one agent fined earlier this year for handing beer and footy boots to a player to try and sign them. So, trying to keep this all in order. Sam.
Daniel, one of the big talking points from the weekend was the finish to Showdown 45, where a score review seemingly missed a ball hitting the post. It wasn't the only thing that raised eyebrows amongst people both at the game and involved in the game.
They saw your double denim get up, did they?
No, they didn't. It wasn't a great joke from you, but that's what we've come to expect. It was what raised the eyebrows, Dan, was when Port Adelaide players were seen walking off the ground, that one of the staff members was carrying a microwave. And
I did see this.
It was put to me whether Port Adelaide blew their own chances.
Sam just completely laughed at me.
In all seriousness, there were microwaves being used the previous week when they went down to Ballarat for the hand warmers.
Yeah,
they were wearing beanies because it was freezing down there. I wonder if they also felt like they needed the same microwave at the show. It wasn't that cold in Adelaide.
Put their memberships in.
Oh, come on,
that's more a Richmond thing to do.
More of a Melbourne,
not more Richmond, more Carlton thing these days.
They don't have enough members.
Like the Giants didn't have enough players, but still beat them in the last quarter.
Don't start with McCartan on me.
Sam, just between us, Bailey Scott, who's in this year's draft pool, he's the son of Robert Scott, former North Melbourne and Geelong player.
Yep.
But he's got the choice of three clubs that he can nominate to be bid on.
Yep.
Gold Coast, because he's a member of their academy.
Yep.
And then obviously North Melbourne and Geelong, where he's Geelong. Dad played. We're pretty sure, just between us, the strong word is it's down to just two. North Melbourne are out of the race, and it's a race in two between Gold Coast and Geelong.
Wow. So, why is that, do you know?
Look, there had been talk.
I thought if anyone was to go out of the race, it would be the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, well, he has been up there. He's part of their academy.
Mm.
So
why is he not getting a game? I'm sorry, that's disrespectful.
Sam, that's just offensive to the Suns.
Sorry, I apologise for that comment.
Look, there had been talk for a while that Robert Scott had been offended by the fact he was dropped from a finals team.
You're not telling me that is still an issue.
Well, I'm not sure.
How many decades was that ago?
Sam, time heals all wounds, not always.
Is that what you'd like written on your tombstone? Time heals all wounds, always?
I'm not sure I'll be getting a tombstone. Just between us.
Just between us.
Just between us.
Rivalry round at the MCG.
It is
everyone in the arena. Standing up, Jimmy Bartel, the Brownlow medalist. Bloody stop lining me up in the commentary box. He approaches. He comes in. He's kicked a point. The best point he'll ever kick. How sweet is redemption?
Jimmy, that must bring back very good memories for you.
It's always nice to... I guess I played it out sort of like a dream. You're normally supposed to kick the goal, to win the game. But no, I was very happy to kick a point and obviously knock over our biggest rival.
You mentioned Wayne Harms before. Wasn't that the line that they said after the game in that one? What's better than beating Collingwood by 10 goals is beating them by 5 points. Did Geelong have the same view about Hawthorn?
No, we just wanted to get a win. Look, when you play really good sides, it's great when both teams have held up their end of the bargain. I know even the Geelong v St Kilda game with both 13-0 and you've thrown everything at it and you walk off the field and you go, that's awesome when the opposition, you know, meets it. So they always live up to the hype. And the only thing I wish now is players who are coming into Geelong and Hawthorn keep that going and understand the importance of it and don't play it down. It's not like any other game.
No.
Absolutely. And the thing is too, in any sporting, I don't want to sound too lofty about this, but in any sporting contest, the quality of the opponent elevates
the great team
or person. Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal have been enhanced by each other.
Every Batman and needs a Robin.
That's, well, or a yeah, Joker, well, sorry. A Joker needs a Batman, yeah. I think.
Batman
needs. I don't know whether you were the – I think holy you guys would see Batman. Yeah. But did you guys – did was the curse real?
No, there was an added edge to it because, look, yeah, was it Jeff Kennett's comments? Was it Paul Chapman's comments? Look, we just didn't want to lose to, you know, who were our biggest rivals, who were a fantastic side. You go through, we'd look at their side and every line they had stars. But we thought we had stars on every line as well. So, you know, if you don't accept that challenge as an athlete or a sports star, well, get out of the professional sport.
Yep. Well, what about this game? How do you see this game panning out, Jimmy?
Well, it's kind of funny. I think Geelong have greater depth in the midfield, top-end talent, and not selling Hawthorn short, but I think Hawthorn have a better forward six and a better back six as a group. They've just been proven over the years. So we mentioned Bruce and Gunston, but Ruffy is another forward option up there as well. I think those three combined, compared to Geelong, who's really Hawkins and debutants, young players, Menzel, who's been in and out of the side, and a resting mid.
He may be injured this week.
Injured groin, or, you know, resting Dangerfield or whoever it may be. And the stats say, even though they're pretty unsung, we mentioned Stratton, but Hawthorn's ability to get their defence up high and ground, especially now without Sicily, and really defend hard in their forward half with their back line, is one of the best in the game at the moment.
My instinct is that Geelong, I favoured Geelong slightly just early in the week. I tipped Hawthorn to beat Essendon, but I just got a feeling Geelong have to win this game. If they want to play finals, they have to win.
How much does that come into it?
About playing finals? Oh, yeah, that'd be...
No, but you're going to be up for any game. I mean, when you're saying they just have to win, well, but you're going to be up for every game, aren't you?
Yeah, and you're playing a side who's a good side as well again. Yeah. So, look, that's the, I guess, the afterthoughts. Once the game's been done, you'll go, well, have we made the most of our opportunity to get ourselves in the finals, or have we missed another opportunity?
Hawkins could do a lot of damage in this game too. He's not going to be playing on Alex Rance.
But so could Bruce and Gunston, because remember Stewart's out as well for Geelong, who'd be a nice matchup for either of those two.
Particularly Gunston.
Yeah.
Do we dare say now that Melbourne's going to play finals, Jake?
Yep, they'll play finals. And they're a team. Here is a great opportunity for the Melbourne Footy Club. You look at the West Coast Eagles.
Don't say that.
No, hang on. Look at the West Coast Eagles' problems.
Yeah.
Look at the problems that Collingwood have had. They've lost Lever, but they're far more intact than
Viney.
Yeah, but I think they've covered Viney so well with Angus Brayshaw. They're a team. I'm Richmond. I don't want to play them in a final. They can go off Melbourne. They've got the ability to score like no other team in the competition.
I wouldn't mind playing them in the first final, but if they win a final and they get the momentum, then they'd be a dangerous team. I think that they'd be in your first final. I think Bob raised this point previously here, and Bob Murphy saying they are the team he thinks that could get that Richmond-like momentum.
Once they broke
that sort of hurdle or cleared that hurdle of the final, what do they do? Franklin's form, that is going to present them this week with the conundrum of or the query, challenge the real query about them, which is behind the ball and their key backs. What do you think of that?
Well, I think with Franklin, you've got to play a fast player on Franklin first. I think that Rory Thompson was a fantastic piece of coaching by Stuart Dew a few weeks ago when Sydney were beaten by the Suns. They had Rory Thompson, who's 6'6" and fast, on Franklin, and Stephen May standing sort of in front of him. I think that's That's the perfect way to play, buddy. And the Swans are not helping here because no one else is going to, looks like, kicking a score. Now, Collingwood, if you want to be critical of Collingwood, they didn't come up with a defensive system around Franklin. Now, they had all sorts of problems, but that the only way to beat him was with two players.
Yeah, I think Jake's nailed it there. You play Frost, who's super quick for a big bloke and has a bit of body size about him, and you get the younger McDonald to any chance. He just sags off the back of McCartan because you pretty much say to Sydney, who else can beat us? Are you going to say to McCartan, are you going to kick 5 or 6 today? Is Haywood going to kick 5 or 6 today? So that's almost the question you're trying to ask to the Swans.
Coming up, quick questions.
Get access to every episode as it drops. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
An opportunity for Dixon, can give it to Johannesson. He'll sprint through the St Kilda defence, give it off to Bontempelli. Standing start from 48 metres. Dogs have got another.
Welcome back. Time for quick questions. And Jake, which was the worst loss of the round? Carlton, Gold Coast or St Kilda?
St Kilda, because you got to measure it against the personnel that was available. So St Kilda was a terrible performance given who they had available and who they were playing.
Oh, St Kilda for me, comfortably. Like, we know what Carlton and the Gold Coast are, but St Kilda are playing someone who's pretty close to them on the ladder.
One spot away.
And it was a 73-point turnaround. So the absolute turn-the-toes-up nature within the game, there was over 100 uncontested marks from both sides.
Is that...
So it just showed you didn't have an interest in rolling the sleeves up and getting dirty and things like that. Bontempelli torched them for 4 goals in a quarter.
What does it say about them, Jake?
Well, they're on the end-of-season trip, I think. A bit of that about it.
It did. Because the nature of the game being played and just the way it was, they just let it play out.
I know those are quick questions, but last week they appointed their new list manager. Mm-hmm. They've backed in their coach. Clearly they say it's a talent, not a coaching issue. How significant a job do they confront in a list sense?
Well, I hope they hope the list manager wasn't at that game already.
They won't have anyone playing next year.
Yeah, because he's got to do the quickest, you know, ticks, crosses, maybes across that list, because it's not much time till we hit that trade free agency period. So he's got to get in and get.
Do they have stuff of value to other clubs?
That's what he's trying to find out.
Don't have a second round pick.
No, but that's what he's got to try and get in and find out. What are we doing? Are we trying to hit the draft? Are we trying to move players on? Are we going to somehow land someone?
All right, these were quick questions, so we'll move on. Jake, were the Suns right to strip Tom Lynch of the co-captaincy?
Yes, in the circumstances, yes. It possibly should have been. The only thing I felt is that maybe it could have been organised well before and Tom would have been aware and he would have put his hand up and do it himself.
You agree? Yeah, of course. He's leaving. He doesn't need the captaincy title. I think he'd probably understand that, wouldn't he?
He would have relinquished it, I would have thought. Oh, yeah. He'd just say, well, I'm not playing and I'm not going to be here.
He'd probably feel odd. I'm still captain.
Yeah. A question from listener David. Which club will Sam Mitchell end up at?
I think Hawthorn. Brett Ratten stepping away from the Hawks. If Clarkson does sign this deal that everyone's sort of reporting to take him, 2022 or whatever it may be, he can do his final apprenticeship under the Grandmaster.
Has he spent long enough away from Hawthorn to have been exposed to another environment for the ideal scenario for a coach in waiting?
Maybe not, but you know, I don't know Sam Mitchell and I don't know what he was exposed to at the Eagles in his 2 years. Jake?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting scenario if he goes back to Hawthorn, because I think the other argument, which no one's brought up, Caro wrote a good piece about this on Saturday, was the do you want to be at a club where you still know the players? Nathan Buckley had to deal with this. This is a much harder ask if you're dealing with players that you played with.
Yeah, that's a good point. But that equally, he's gone away and had a fresher view of them, and I'm not sure what his relationships were.
But he did that at West Coast.
Yes. Yeah, but only for a year. Another listener question from Ali. Who is the best defender in the game? Jake,
we touched on this with apologies to Stratton.
And apologies to McGovern.
And I quite like Nick Floston.
Oh, I'm a card-carrying holder of the Nick Floston fan club.
And another final question, a listener, well, I won't get the name wrong here, Mark. Why was there a big clean out of assistant coaches at the Swans in the off-season?
Well, one of them went and took the Gold Coast job, so that's quite obvious. And Henry Playfair, who's been a long-time assistant at the Swans, you talk to people in footy circles is potentially heading down the senior coach path. And we just spoke about it. You've got to get other experiences. He's only ever been the coaching path under the Swans. So he's looking to broaden his learnings down at the Saints. And they always change coaching staff so far, especially if John Longmire's been in the role for so long. You've got to freshen the group somewhere.
I think basically your last point's the salient one. You have to freshen up if the senior coach stays a long time.
You either freshen up or you have other scenarios where it's, say, St Kilda. We're keeping the coach, but we're changing the other people around him, and that happened at Collingwood and Richmond prior to that. That's all we have time for this week. A big thank you to you, Jimmy, and to you, Toe Turf Jake, for joining us this week. I hope your toe's better by next week, Jake. And thanks to Channel 7 and Fox Footy for the audio used in this episode. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes and to send us an email with your questions and feedback, realfootypod@fairfaxmedia.com.au. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.